I'm Dr. David Malbranche, Senior Director of Global HIV Medical Affairs at Gilead Sciences.
I am Dr. Christopher Chauncey Watson, Global Marketing Director at Gilead Sciences.
Welcome to Zero Hour, a podcast brought to you by Gilead Sciences, where we will be speaking with leading health and culture experts to understand the barriers that keep global populations from meaningful, transformative care. We'll shed light on inequities, we'll celebrate innovation, and together, we'll imagine a world with zero barriers, zero disparities, zero new infections, and zero people left behind. It's possible, but there's zero time to wait.
You know what they say, home is where the heart is. But what if going home is not an option? Maybe it's not safe to return home. Or maybe home does not exist. Migrants and displaced people don't just worry about being away from home. They worry about inequities as it relates to education, social support, and healthcare. And this leaves them susceptible to exploitation, erasure, and HIV. Today's guests are leading efforts to change these harsh realities for migrants and displaced people across Europe. I am Christopher Chauncey Watson, and this is another episode of Zero Hour, a global podcast brought to you by Gilead Sciences.
And I'm David Malbranche. Today, we're talking to two people who are on the front lines helping migrants and refugees across Europe access the care that they need and find the security and safety that we all deserve. Dennis Onyango is Director of Programs at the Africa Advocacy Foundation and oversees initiatives supporting migrants at risk or living with HIV, hepatitis, mental health, TB, and other health conditions, as well as those who are experiencing violence, sexual exploitation, trafficking, and harmful cultural practices. Dennis has experience leading key public health, education, and social programs relevant to Black and migrant communities in Europe. And Ished Hussein is the founder and director of the Prisma Group Foundation, a grassroots organization working with HIV refugees in the Netherlands. She is an outspoken Pakistani Dutch, Muslim trans woman, and queer activist who was awarded the Local Diversity Award, WINC. Hussein has more than 13 years of experience helping bicultural and or Islamic LGBTQ plus people as an activist, social worker, project leader, and director of the Prisma Group Foundation. Welcome to both of you today.
Dennis, I want to start with you. You grew up in Kenya and you became a teacher.
Yes.
What happened in your personal life that inspired you to do HIV advocacy?
Thank you, Chauncey. I'm glad to be here. And it's a pleasure to be able to share my experiences and the work I do. As you've said, I come from Kenya. That's where I grew up. I had a personal tragedy because I lost my elder brother, to AIDS. I had the difficulty of having to nurse him until he died. And then subsequently, I lost three sisters to AIDS as well. My brother died and I came to the UK. Whilst he was living in Kenya, there was no treatment. And when I came to the UK, I noticed that there was treatment. And this kind of made me wonder what could have been if he was living in a different part of the world. And so that started my journey towards trying to ensure that everyone has a chance to access treatment.
Can you tell me about the work that you do with migrants, particularly through the Africa Advocacy Foundation?
So Africa Advocacy Foundation is a charity in the UK. Was started 25 years ago. The charity was started at a time when there was no treatment. There was a lot of deaths amongst migrant communities. And it was primarily initiated to promote HIV messaging, create awareness around HIV and prevent HIV transmission. The HIV landscape has changed thanks to science and innovation. And we are at a time right now when we are looking at proper quality of life for people who are living with HIV. And that means that we do HIV prevention in the communities, including faith settings, barbershops, community centers, and all other venues where diaspora African communities go. We conduct HIV testing in the community, and we link people to care, but we also run peer support groups for people living with HIV. So that's primarily in the UK. In Europe, we do policy work to try and challenge unjust laws across the cascade of care for migrants. And we also work on testing, education, and creating a community of practice in Europe.
And when we speak of migrants, how do you define that?
So there are different definitions to migrants, but I understand it as any person who leaves their regular place of residence to move either within a country or across international borders permanently or temporarily for a variety of reasons.
I want to bring Izzet into this conversation. Before we talk about your work with Prisma, let's talk about your story. You were born in the Netherlands to Pakistani immigrant parents. What was it like growing up brown and Muslim within a mostly Dutch community?
Yes, it was sometimes difficult. So then, yes, as the first generation growing up in the Netherlands, it was difficult because first of all, I'm like brown and queer. I don't know what I'm first, like queer or brown, but I'm both. And also, yes, I'm Muslim. So it was difficult because people always underestimated me and they have so much prejudice. Nowadays, it's much better because a lot of things I was thinking and there was like nothing, even nothing about brown persons, Muslim queers. And I needed that because I felt lonely and I was basically kind of okay in school. Of course, I get bullied also with being so feminine as not a born female. So that was also rough and tough. And again, at the same time, there was always safety because I come from a family with also a lot of love. So that always helped me.
Izzet, you are the founder and director of the Prisma Group Foundation. What does Prisma do to support displaced people?
So what we do mainly is empowerment of BIPOC LGBTQI+. So also we have a lot of, in the Netherlands, mostly we use the word refugee. So I think one of the most important things that we do is tell them about the system. How do things work? How do people think in the Netherlands? And that is very important to getting asylum because a lot of people think that people are waiting for them to come and that the countries are easy, the richer countries. But we know very well, coming from a lot of privilege sitting here, that countries are getting really difficult. So a lot of people don't understand it. Even people don't have email, let alone to convince the immigration officers that you are queer and your life is in danger.
You spoke BIPOC, so I want to unpack that for our listeners. And so that means Black, Indigenous, people of color.
What are the key issues, in your opinion, faced by LGBTQ migrants?
For the migrants, most important is asylum. When you get asylum, you get kind of citizenship. So you have like equal rights. Then we have racism. So people don't get jobs because... Again, the Netherlands is a difficult country. It is safe and it's also very unsafe.
Dennis, what are the challenges people are facing, migrants are facing, particularly in Europe?
So we know that Europe is very hostile to migrants. So the term migration is used in a very negative sense in Europe. And people forget, or the journalists or the media forgets that behind every migrant there's a story. And so they are desirable migrants and those who are not desired. And you can see that vividly in Europe right now, especially with the conflict in Ukraine right now, where we have a situation of migrants who are welcome and those who are not welcome simply because they are black or brown. And so the challenges our migrants experience in Europe are both individual kind of challenges, those ones that are caused by the system itself. And obviously, and that includes lack of access to services simply because people do not understand how to navigate services. There is discrimination, xenophobia, And of course, a lot of migrants have a lot of intersection. You know, we have migrant sex workers, we have homeless migrants, we've got migrants who are LGBTIQ, we've got women who are migrants, and injecting drug users, and some prison populations as well. And so the challenges are really pervasive, and you find that, you know, we are talking about reaching zero by 2030, but we know that a significant proportion of European people are not catered for in terms of HIV. So, you know, last in 2020, 104,000 migrants were, people were diagnosed with HIV in Europe. Of this, 44% were actually migrants. And a huge proportion of these 44% are actually undocumented. There are a lot of legal challenges, systemic challenges. Healthcare in Europe is quite devolved. And therefore, each country decides what kind of, who accesses and who does not access services. With all these efforts to get to zero, there are a lot of countries that are still restricting access to HIV testing. And there are around 11 countries that actually do not allow treatment access for undocumented migrants. If you know, for example, the trajectory of migration from sub-Saharan Africa, for example, we have individuals who are moving to North Africa, Libya, staying there under all manner of circumstances and violence. They manage to go through the Mediterranean. Some of them don't make it. For those who arrive in Europe, they find healthcare systems that are set for populations that are settled. For example, if somebody arrived in Greece and they wanted to go to the UK as their final destination to seek asylum in the UK, they were living with HIV, or if they are living with undiagnosed HIV, you find that in places like Greece, there are challenges accessing testing based on your immigration status. And so for this person to actually access testing, be linked into care, and remain in care is a huge challenge because they are on the move. So that makes them vulnerable. That ensures that it causes people not to be diagnosed on time. And even when they're diagnosed and put on treatment, they get lost to care because of that journey.
Yeah, and if we talk about if you're not diagnosed, if you don't know that you're living with HIV, how can you get on treatment so your virus can't get to undetectable? So from a public health perspective, it keeps going on.
And the challenge really that the European healthcare systems have very devolved. So if somebody is on the move, there are chances that they are not going to be able to have a stable care, mm-hmm. even if they're diagnosed with HIV and given medication, there are chances that they're not going to sustain that treatment. The challenges are both individual, systemic, and of course, you know, a lot of legal and regulatory challenges.
You mentioned the disproportionate impact of HIV on migrants in the UK. Can you talk a little bit about the health outcomes among these migrants living with HIV?
If you have an MSM, you know, migrant who has come to Europe, who does not know where to access, who feels that the services are not made for him, he's got a history of criminalization. He's come from a country where, you know, LGBT people are criminalized. And he comes to Europe and is struggling to access testing, is struggling to access, you know, services. And maybe he's diagnosed with HIV and linked to care. You know, his problems are not really what a gay man in Europe would have, same problems, because in the list of priorities is mostly about how he's going to survive, how he's not going to get deported, how he's going to, you know, to live to see another day. And while for somebody, the HIV outcomes might mean being able to go to a gym, maintain his diet properly. So when we talk about the framework of HIV outcomes, we actually have to make it specific to specific populations because it means different things to different people.
Dennis, you mentioned MSM when referring to migrants. Can you explain what that is, what that stands for, and how it's different from gay?
We use the term MSM to refer to men who have sex with men. And it's a deliberate term because many men who consider themselves in heterosexual relationships actually have sex with other men. And so they don't identify as gay.
You talked about ending the epidemic by 2030. What I imagine you're speaking about are the UNAIDS perspective as it looks at 95, 95, 95. When we speak about 95, 95, 95, what are we speaking about?
So these are targets that have been set by UNAIDS. It's called the cascade of care, which means that 95% of people who are living with HIV have been diagnosed. Of those diagnosed, 95% are on treatment. And of those on treatment, 95% are virally suppressed. And so these are the targets that have been set by UNAIDS to guide countries in their strategies to end HIV.
Why is that important, reaching those goals?
The 95, 95, 95 targets are important because they give many countries frameworks or targets to work towards, especially when they're addressing HIV in key populations, such as men who have sex with men, sex workers, migrants, people who inject drugs, and other vulnerable populations in terms of HIV.
How does migration affect reaching the goals of 95, 95, 95?
Okay, so when we talk about the vulnerability of mobile populations or displaced people, we know that there are a lot of challenges in terms of healthcare systems in various countries to address the particular vulnerabilities that they have. So the burden of HIV in Europe is heavily tilted against migrants because it's quite disproportionate. And therefore, in the context of reaching the 95, 95, 95 targets, it is important that we look at how we can address the gaps that are existing within the cascade of care to ensure that migrants are able to access prevention, the latest biomedical interventions for HIV, that they are linked to care, and that they have better quality of life in terms of HIV.
How is Prisma Group Foundation supporting refugees living with HIV?
So yes, what we try to do is when people come to us and then they tell their story. So we have basically a lot of trans females coming to us and telling that they didn't get the hormones yet to get into the transition. What Prisma is doing with every person who's coming to us, so people ask us questions, and some people can be really direct in that way and tell exactly what they need, and some can't. Basically, one of the things that is very important to give people, like a good psychologist, a lot of people don't know about transcultural psychologists, to look at our traumas and also to be more in peace with ourselves. Of course, what we do is we speak with people who do the healthcare, we type the emails, we call the doctors, because again, there is a lot going on and it's sometimes difficult even to get like a referral to a psychologist. So one of the, in that way, easy thing what we do is to provide spaces where they can get tested on STDs. And then also we do the education, because then the people come anyway to do the testing, and then other people or the same people are also there to do the education.
But how important is representation? Are there a lot of trans men and women that are involved in the organization that are helping, that are there? And how does that help with the safety that people feel when they come to see you?
It is definitely important, because like in our board, we have four trans persons. And yes, one cis and gay male, but also with a migrant background. I am the director and also the initiator. So that, of course, attracts the trans energy. So it's very important to show different kind of persons. We have somebody else who is now a doctor. So it's a Turkish boy. So Islamic background. And we go on and on, because we have also in our board, we have somebody from Kuwait. We have somebody from the Philippines. Then we have somebody from Afghanistan. Then we have a Moroccan person, and then it's also about the intersectional diversity.
And that diversity is so important, and it sounds very intentional to make sure that people feel comfortable. Dennis, I wanted to circle back to you right quick. How can we make HIV prevention better for displaced people and migrants?
I think that a lot of countries in Europe have not appreciated the challenges at hand. in terms of the burden of HIV. So a lot of public health programs are not focusing on HIV because there's assumption that HIV is sorted or that migrants are not worthy of caring for. And I think that a serious conversation has to be had amongst policymakers and people who make decisions in Europe. At the moment, there's a perception that HIV is imported, and it is not actually imported. I think that the reason why a lot of people get infected with HIV post-migration in Europe is because the system don't realize how vulnerable many people are. There was a cross-sectional study that was done between 2013 and 2015 in Europe that looked at a cohort of patients in around 57 clinics in 10 countries. So there were around 3,000 patients that were looked at, and they found that 63% of them had acquired HIV after they had migrated in Europe. And if you look at this, the median age between when people actually get infected and when they are diagnosed is almost 3 years. So there's really serious awareness that needs to be undertaken. I think there needs to recognize the prevention gaps that we have, the opportunities we have, like around biomedical interventions to ensure that people don't get infected with HIV. We know that public education programs around HIV awareness and knowledge about HIV is really, really, really bad, poor or low amongst migrant communities. So I think that we have to go back to the basics. We need to trust community organizations that have networks and connections with various populations, whether they're sex workers or injecting drug users or undocumented migrants. We need to be able to have culturally specific services. We need to take into account lived experiences. Most times we do things for communities instead of letting them lead and take lead in these initiatives. And our populations are always referred to as hard to reach. I personally think that's the services that are difficult to reach. We know where the communities are. So I think that if there was recognition about the expertise of community-led organization, if there was seriousness in terms of investment, to ensure that we have the right interventions, and if there was appreciation of, for example, the benefits of PrEP or messaging around U equals to U, we would go a long way in trying to address gaps in prevention.
If it's any consolation, that same narrative happens in the United States all the time. It's one of my most hated phrases, hard to reach. Just say, you don't know how to reach this population, and we can go from there. Instead of pathologizing the group, acting like they're hiding in plain sight. So U equals U stands for undetectable equals untransmittable. By undetectable, what this means is that someone who's living with HIV is on medications, on treatment, that gets their viral load to what's called undetectable. That's when the number of virus that can be detected in the bloodstream is less than 200 copies. And it's not only important to keep it at that at one period of time, but also to sustain it for at least 6 months. That's what we mean when we say undetectable equals untransmittable. And it's important because if someone is undetectable, their risk of transmitting HIV to their sexual partners is essentially zero.
Shad, why are migrants and refugees more vulnerable to HIV?
The obvious reason, they don't know the society. Also, a lot of them come alone. Nowadays, people come in horrible conditions and they drown in the sea. And states are making this laws, even not to rescue people who are drowning. There is a lot of reason why it's really tough for people, for migrants. At the same time, a lot of us hide behind our smile, behind all the pain we face. So,
thank you for sharing. Dennis, for you, what are these vulnerabilities?
So the vulnerabilities I see are socioeconomic. We have those at personal level in terms of people's ability to prioritize health. The hostile environment policies that Europe has that keeps migrants away from services, for example, for fear that they might be deported or immigration enforcement might be taken against them, particularly if they don't have legal status in the countries that they are in. But I also think that the migration policies have taken away dignity of many, many people. So for those ones who do not have recourse to public funds, or, for example, a woman who is on a spousal visa, their dignity is basically taken away because the person who sponsored them to come on a visa determines really how they live their life. And we have had cases, like we worked with a woman recently who was trafficked into the UK at the age of 17, got married to somebody. And, you know, eventually she found that she was HIV positive. And for a long time, she wasn't able to interact or be allowed to access the supportive networks that are necessary. And subsequently we managed to reach the lady and support her, but her story is really very telling in that regard. So I think that systems are stacked up against our communities. The situation where, for example, a woman has to engage in transactional sex to be able to provide for their family because they cannot access welfare support. We see this amongst migrants from Latin America, that when they come to Europe, they really have no option but to engage in transactional sex to survive. So we need to address fundamentally some of the socioeconomic issues that put people at a disadvantage. But I also feel that levels of knowledge of HIV and the ability of individuals that we work with, or the migrants we work with, to be able to access services or to be supported to access services, for example, treatment, and be retained in care, is something that needs to be looked at.
I want to come to you. Do these challenges that Dennis speaks to, are they different for LGBTQ plus individuals?
Yes, I think they are a bit more difficult for LGBTQI plus persons, because of course you are also in that way a minority. So yes, it can be difficult because some people don't have contact with their family. Of course, there is a lot going on when you are a trans person. You have a lot of times this time where you are being in transition, so you don't have the passing privilege yet. And I'm not saying people should have the passing privilege or get it, but of course I know it's easier when people see from far a female or a male, because it's just easier for their minds.
Can you say what passing privilege is?
Yes, of course. So passing privilege is like when a trans person does the transition and he or she looks like a male or a female, like a cis person. So a cis person is somebody who's like born in the same body and feel also like in the same gender. Mm-hmm.
What else can people in your communities do to support the work of your organization?
Community-led initiatives can actually make a change. So we are part of the Zeroing In program, for example. It's the first time across Europe that we are having a migrant-led HIV initiative in 10 European countries. And we have done over 2,500 HIV tests. We have asked questions around PrEP awareness, PrEP usage, likelihood of PrEP usage. We have had data that is very indicative of the various gaps that we see. At the moment, migrants in Europe are really not spoken about simply because there is no data there. So if there is anything that anyone can do, I think it's more advocacy around having complete data, because, and you cannot make policy, you cannot plan services without data. Going back to the basics around ensuring that levels of awareness of HIV are high, HIV is not sorted, and I think that's an issue that needs to be done. So the work of my organization really around trying to give voice and visibility to migrant community is very much dependent on how good we are able to collect data that is representative and that shows the levels of need. I think that we need to be supported to develop educational programs around HIV that can ensure that everyone has information that they and the tools that they need to be able to access testing, treatment, and to maintain a positive HIV life.
For me, what I've always learned in public health is that if you don't have the data to back it up, people will basically look at it as anecdotes. What else can community do to support your organization? What would you say?
I think it's very important for organizations like Prisma to get the resources, because for a lot of BIPOC organizations, it's more difficult to get funding. Also, not only telling us that we need to do the work as volunteers, because that happens a lot. It's really important to get the right resources, and also that people listen to us, that they listen to the stories we tell.
I think when we look towards ending the epidemic, it is all the tools and all of us that will collectively begin to end that. As we wrap this conversation, I start with just, again, being humbled and saying thank you. This has been so meaningful and impactful, even for myself. I want to ask each of you just a simple question, and I'll start here with you, Ishad. What does the end of the HIV epidemic look like for you?
For me, it is important that all the persons have the same human rights. And besides having the same human rights, that also all the resources are available for everybody. It doesn't matter if you are trans or whatever identity you have.
Dennis, what does the end of the HIV epidemic look like for you?
The end of HIV epidemic for me, all stakeholders, especially people in key decision making, have to recognize that migrants or other vulnerable populations deserve to be treated equally. I think that for a long time, we have had cases where governments or systems do not actually recognize the vulnerabilities that we see amongst key populations. So there is no way we are going to get to zero when these existing gaps in prevention, gaps in testing, gaps in treatment, gaps in stigma are not addressed. So I would love to see a Europe where everyone has access to services, irrespective of their background, their sexuality, the skin of their color, or the economic circumstances.
Thank you for sharing your stories, and just thank you for being here today to talk about your experiences working with both migrants and refugee groups. As a child, my favorite movie was The Wiz, and what I loved most was the good witch, who was Glinda. She had a wand that created an outcome for the characters in that movie. I wish I had that wand today to make an outcome for health inequities to go away. But there's no magic solution to ensuring all people have equal rights, not just to HIV treatment, but also to prevention and the resources needed to live a healthy and long-term life. It's going to take real-world action. It's going to take hard work and accountability. It's going to take all of us and our brilliant minds, as well as our hearts and our courage, to see the end of the epidemic.
Thanks for listening. If you liked what you heard today, don't forget to subscribe to Zero Hour wherever you get your podcasts and look for it on YouTube. For more information, please also visit GileadHIVTogether.com.
This presentation is protected by U.S. and international copyright laws and owned by Gilead Sciences. The podcast should not be copied, reproduced, or distributed in whole or in part without express permission from Gilead Sciences. The views expressed in this podcast are not necessarily those of Gilead Sciences.